Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Every team, every topic, everywhere, this is Believe.
I was going to ask, do you make more money on the YouTube than you have in your soccer career?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of Chum Chat. It's your boy, Johan Gomez, alongside my co-host, Tanner Testament. And we have a very, very special guest, the founder of Become Elite, the very popular Become Elite YouTube channel, as well as professional footballer, Matt Sheldon. Thank you for coming on, Matt.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to chat.
Of course, of course. And if you guys are new here, make sure to like, share, and subscribe. And let's get into it. I mean, coming off, let's start with the career. Obviously, you're in a new team, the Battery. But let's start with last season. Obviously, we were just talking about it, playing against Jogo a bunch back at FC Tulsa. But also, your most successful season to date. 2 goals, 3 assists, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm a little bit opposite than you guys. I'm a little bit of a late bloomer. Your guys' careers have both kind of just exploded really early on, which is awesome. So I think that, like, for me, it really didn't click at the pro level until, like, probably I was 27. And I felt like last year was definitely my best season by far, when I was just most confident on the pitch. And hopefully just keep on keeping that up for as long as I can, you know?
Of course. Good, bro. We're just trying to find a little bit of a common ground here. So me and Tan actually both have been to camp with Matteo Ritaccio. That's now your teammate on loan from Liverpool. Shout out, Matteo. It was my roommate at that camp, actually. How have you found him as a teammate, I guess?
He's awesome. He's goofy. He's a goofy guy. He's really funny. No matter what, like, every day, we're always kind of making fun of him in the locker room just because he's a young kid. He means really well. He's got a really good heart. But we're always kind of, like, poking fun, just as you poke fun at everybody. But he likes to, like, put himself in the center of attention and kind of take a lot of that, which is funny. How did you guys find him at the U.S. youth national team camps?
I mean, this guy, Johan, is goofy as well. So they got along really well. But but yeah, he's a good player. I thought he played well, came on in our game versus the UE and scored a goal. So I really liked him. I keep in touch with him. I'm a Liverpool fan, so obviously I got a different connection with him, but yeah.
Yeah.
I actually had him as a roommate, and I found him not to be as goofy, actually. Mm-hmm. But maybe he's changed a little bit more. But I remember he was always complaining about the English food, because he used to live with, like, a host family, and he was like, bro, the English food is so bad. And he was always complaining about it, so I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah. I will say, like, it probably took him – like, a couple weeks to open up. Like, you know, there's guys immediately who are talking, laughing, cracking jokes. For him, it probably took like 3-4 weeks, and then all of a sudden his personality really came out, which is really, really funny. He's a good player, really, really talented. He's coming back from a little injury, but I think he'll be big for us in the next, like, or actually hopefully for the rest of the season once he's back.
Is that why he's not in the squad now?
Like, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's nice.
Yeah, struggling with nothing major, but, you know, just whenever you're in preseason, you're ramping up like that, just sometimes the body just doesn't handle that well.
All right, guys, football might be over the season, but college and pro hoops are in full swing. For all the latest odds, totals, player performances, props to where the next fired coach is going to land, BET Online has all your betting needs. Head over to the website of your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% off welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use our promo code BELIEVE, BLEAV, to get started.
Yeah, yeah. You came off a kind of a rough last game, huh? Double yellow.
Yeah, that was just dumb, stupid mistakes. First mistake, like, it was just like, I thought it was a hard tackle. And I think this year, for whatever reason, I think in the USL, they've really ramped up giving out yellow cards. I think there's been, like, our first game, we had 11 yellow cards in a game. And I didn't think it was a particularly, like, bad game at all. And then there's just like been the most yellows ever to a start in the USL season. And I don't know if they're cracking down on something or what's going on, but it was a hard tackle. I fouled this winger pretty tough, just like knee went into his thigh and definitely was a foul, but then got a yellow really early on. And then Atlanta kind of just started switching the play. The wingers are flying at the fullbacks over and over again. And that's always tough when you're on a yellow. And they get the winger took a big touch. This is like in the 45th minute plus one or something. And it was like right in between us. And I hesitated for a second because I was like, oh, I'm on a yellow. But then I'm like, oh, it's a 50-50. I have to go through this. And that little hesitation was a half second late, came into the slide tackle late, fouled them. That one was 100% a yellow. And then I had to get that one. And yeah, I got sent off, which was my first red card of my career, which is frustrating because I've never had to sit out because of this. But yeah, it was first time for everything, you know?
Yeah, I feel you on that one. I feel you on that one.
Yeah, Tanner got a red card. This is Ninji Tan.
Yeah, I was the first. I have a title, though. You know, I'm the first American to get a red card in Serie A. So it's like a cool-ish thing. But, man, mm-hmm. I feel you. It's so bad sitting out, like the prep for the game. Like, obviously, you could train the first couple of days of the week. But then when it comes to the trainings for the games and the tactics and you have to sit out mm-hmm. or train on the side, it's like it's so bad. And that's what that I hate that the most. Like, I don't know, in the game, you're full of emotion and whatever the red card is, you know, you try to play your best. You're not like intentionally trying to get a red. But
yeah,
sitting out is like the worst. And I mean, it depends what position you're in as well. Like you could lose your spot, you know, if a guy plays well or you just don't want to give up, you know, you want to keep your rhythm going and try to get as many opportunities as you can. So, but yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, it's definitely tough coming off a red, but who do y'all have next? I know the USL definitely has, it's ramped up and I want to get into this as well. Like what your goals have been as a player, but we can get into this after, but how do you see the season going for you guys and yourself individually?
Yeah. It's definitely a very different team than Tulsa. Cause Tulsa was it was older, a lot more experienced, kind of keep the ball a lot and just a lot of players just coming from different leagues with a lot of experience. So it was kind of like it was very tactical. And like, we didn't really have like a real identity. It was kind of just like, oh, we have a lot of experience in the team. Let's all just play how we all kind of want to play on the field. And then here it's almost like the opposite. We have a really young, really athletic team. And like, I'm the oldest guy on this team, which is crazy. I've never been in that role before. And I'm only 29, which just shows how young the team is. And before you guys make fun of, you know, 29 for being old, 29 is still young. And like, it's just weird because we have such a young team. So there's a lot of like tactical stuff that I feel like we're still learning and still have to get. But when stuff is firing, and I think as soon as we get that, those tactics kind of nailed down, I think that this team could be really good. But it is like we're in that beginning of that learning curve, you know?
Well, let me ask you if the schedule that I saw was correct. Didn't you guys already play Tulsa and did you guys beat them?
Mm-hmm.
How was that?
Yeah,
was
huge.
That was nice.
Yeah. Have you guys ever played against like one of your old former teams before? I know you guys have jumped because you guys are both from Dallas, right? And you went over abroad.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've never played against my old club.
No. This was like I've done it a couple times before. And whenever you do that, like it's just so exciting, especially if the old coach is still there. Some of your old friends and teammates are still there. So it was really like, I really, really wanted to beat those guys. But like, you also have a lot of respect, you know, you have a lot of respect for the team, a lot of respect for the coaching staff and everything. So it was I was definitely really amped up and first home game of the season. So I was really pumped for that. But yeah, to get the win for that game was huge. And so that was like a good example of how if things are going well, I think this team could be really, really effective. But we just, like I said, we make some mistakes and I make some mistakes with the red card and stuff. But I think, you know, it can work out really well.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think y'all have a good team. I seen some of the guys. I follow the league a little bit. So, I mean, I think anything's possible as well. Once you make the playoffs and you're in form, team's in form, you could go mm-hmm. on a run. But
how are you liking Venezia?
Hey, I love it, man. It's been, you know, it's been a journey. It's different, you know, having relegation. And obviously we're a team at the beginning of the year knowing that we were going to be in the battle. So it's definitely different for sure, but you know, we're doing well. The guys we're forming together and we're 9 games left. So important games coming up. It's, you know, it's a different atmosphere. It's a different, like the fans are crazy. So, mm-hmm. you know, we want to do it for the city. We want to do it for the club and the history. So It's tough, but yeah, living in Italy is amazing. Venice is unbelievable. I don't know if you've ever been, but unbelievable. You should definitely come if you have. But I've loved it so far. So
yeah. I visited Venice back in like 2016. I think they were back in like Serie like C, like the third division back then. But I didn't get to see a game because it was right during the summer break. But I saw their stadium, walked around and everything. But it's crazy to see their rise up to Serie A.
Yeah, it's been crazy. I mean, we have like one or two players that have been here since they've been like in Serie D or like Serie C. And it's crazy that, I don't know, just to think about them leveling up like that and being here along the whole ride of different owners, different coaches. And it's crazy. But yeah, it's definitely been a journey for the guys. And this year has been a journey in itself. And yeah, it's been up and down for sure. But, you know, we're hoping to end on a big high. It'd be massive for everyone on the team. You know, it changed our lives for sure. But I want to ask you about obviously your playing career. Like growing up in America back then, soccer wasn't, you know, they didn't have maybe academies or different options for you to play. Maybe even ODP wasn't as big as a thing when you were coming up. But what was your like ambition when you were playing high school soccer and when you went to college? What was like the goal for you?
Yeah. I think like every player always has a dream to play pro, like one day, like you watch, you know, like for me, it was always like watching Thierry Henry, Ronaldinho and those guys where I was like, wow, that would be so cool to play in a World Cup. It'd be so cool to do that. But like, kind of like what you said, like there wasn't an academy team in the state of Oregon for me growing up, which is just crazy to think about. And there's just like local club teams that train twice a week. And once a week that we would train, it was just running around the track because the other team had the field. So we really only got one ball or one day out of the week to actually train on the field, which is just so it was all for me. It was just all individual stuff. 1v1s with my brother, just training in like my front yard in Portland in the rain all the time. So it was very different than I think a lot of players like growing up now, which is just the growth of football in America. It's just been crazy to see over the last like 20 years. So I definitely felt like I got a little like late start to it, a little behind with everything. And so I never was thinking, oh yeah, it's even going to be a possibility for me to play pro. I was just like, I love this game. I love working out. I love training. I'll just see how far I can take it. And I was told by multiple coaches like, oh no, you can't play ODP. You're not good enough for that. You can't play in college. You can't leave, you know, go D1 or anything. And then I just kind of was like, okay, we'll see. I like it. I'll keep working. I'll keep training. We'll see how far I can take it because I love it. I don't care if I have to play, you know, at this local community college or if I can go D1. I just want to keep playing. And all of a sudden, it just like things kept on falling into place with where I was working and sending out highlight videos and just doing the stuff behind the scenes. You know, I go into UC Davis, a D1 school, same thing there. I had no idea like what was going to happen. I just was like, I love it. I love training. I love working hard. I love pushing to see how far I can take it. Found some success there. Got into like the San Jose Earthquakes U23 team, which at that time they were playing in the PDL, which is now the USL League 2. And then again, did well there. And then all of a sudden, like right around there at 21 was like the first time where I was like, oh wow. Like if I'm performing here for the San Jose Earthquakes U23 team, like the next step is the professional level. So I was like, wow, like I could actually go there. So that at 21, that was the first time where I actually like thought like it's a realistic pathway to try to go play pro, which I think is very late for a lot of kids to even think about that. So my whole thought process was I don't care what path I take or where I go. I just really like playing and seeing how high of a level I can play for. I like that. So I was always just like, let's see. And even now, like the same exact thing, I'm 29. I realize that going to the MLS now is the opportunity is fading and diminishing as I get older, but it's the same thing. I absolutely love training every day out of the field, working, seeing how far I can push my body, seeing how far I can take my game and just seeing how high of a level I can go to wherever that is. So it's like, I still have that same thought of just like, we'll see what happens. Just work as hard as you can and everything will fall into place, you know? And that's just what I still think today.
Yeah. I think that's so interesting because shout out Brandon Cervenia, our last guest from FC Dallas last week. We were talking about this, Tan. I don't obviously remember about every footballer's moment in which they realize maybe they're just talking about going to college. They're like, okay, this is all I can do. Maybe go D1. And then all of a sudden they're ripping it up in college. You're like, okay, maybe I can go pro. And it's so interesting seeing every footballer's moment that they have. Like you said, maybe you have it at 21, maybe you have it at 25, you know, like you said, and I know that's like also a big part of your channel is you saying that it's not, it's never really too late. Like a lot of people think it's too late, but it's not. And I like how you were talking about your age, 29, earlier. Like you said, that's young. Now you see ballers like Ronaldo, Ibrahimovic. You know, I think the length of a footballer's career with the technology we have now is really, you know, expanding, getting longer. So, and I've seen your videos. Shout out, obviously, I already shouted out Become Elite. If you guys want to check them out, we'll link it in the description. But you're always talking about your routine and your body. You take care of your body really well. So ideally, where do you think you can, how old do you think you can play till?
Yeah, honestly, right now, I was talking to some of my teammates about this like the other day, because they call me grandpa because I'm the oldest on the team. But it's crazy because like I feel just as good as I do now as I felt at 21, 22, like literally the exact same on the field, except for the game is way, way slower. And I feel like astronomically better as a player. But like my, in terms of my body, I feel the same exact as I did at 21. So like in my head, like, I don't think it's crazy to think mid to late 30s. Now, like what's funny is like, I think my body will outlast like my mind and like how long I want to play for, you know, because playing at the lower divisions is always tough. It comes with like with its own grind, but I think I could play like just with my body, like, yeah, 35, 36, 37, hopefully. And it's crazy to think about that even for me, if like, okay, if I did want to play that long, that's another 8 years of development, even for you guys. Cause how old are you, Johan?
We're both 20. We're both 20. Yeah.
Yeah. You're both 20. So like, it's crazy for me to think about that. Like, and think about where you guys were like 5 years ago at 15. And then to think, okay, add another 5 years, how much you've grown from 15 to 20 as a player and a person, and then think, okay, we'll do that again at 25. And then that's how much more growth you're going to have. And then from 25 to 30, and then from 35 or from 30 to 35, that's another like crazy years of development. And like what I've seen, like it just ramps up, like your development and knowledge as a player just keeps ramping up and ramping up. So like your development is just, it's just crazy to think about like how much of a better player you can become over the next 5-10 years, you know? So that's like something I always think about.
Interesting. Cause in Italy, I mean, we got players, our oldest player is like 39 and he's a left back, played at Juventus, big time player. And he's still, I mean, he's one of our most experienced and like solid players. Like when we need a reliable like player to put in, he's always there. So I think it's very interesting. Obviously, I think you definitely take care of your body and do the right thing. So I think it's definitely feasible for you. But yeah, it's crazy to hear that, because on our team, it's like 29 is like, this is a normal age. Like this is an age where players are in their peak and they're performing well. So it's like, I would never say 29 is old. But
yeah,
obviously, if you're on a young team, I mean, I guess it makes sense. But yeah.
Yeah. And most of that too is just like, you know, them just messing around, yeah, joking, yeah, throwing whatever. But yeah, no, I 100% agree.
I know you mentioned pushing towards MLS, obviously, super successful channel, 476,000 subs. You have, is there a point where you get tired of the same questions? Maybe the people asking you, like, when are you going to MLS? When are you going to MLS? What league do you play in? Like, all the same questions.
A little bit. Like, I'd say, like, it does get a little bit old sometimes, but it also means to me that new people are like coming to the channel and finding my channel for the first time, which I always think is really cool to think about that. Cause I think it would be bad if it was the questions started running out, or, you know, nobody was asking those new questions. Cause it kind of means like, oh, I'm not picking up a new audience. And I've always kind of thought, like, I don't know why I thought this, but like when I was making the YouTube channel, At first I thought that like I would get annoyed, like, have they not seen my videos? And then I kind of realized, well, every year there's a new wave of players like really, really falling in love with the game of like really training and taking their diet right and taking care of their body and want to actually take their, you know, training to like the professional level. So I think that's cool to have that new wave every single month or every single year coming in and finding that. So yeah, I try to answer a lot, but it does get a little overwhelming. And sometimes, you know, even with social media, whatever, there's always like the positive side and negative side with that. But I think for the most part, people are pretty nice.
Yeah. Before we get into the channel, can we talk about your experiences of playing in Germany and New Zealand, correct?
Yeah. Yeah.
Can we talk about kind of how you made the decision to go to Germany and what that was like? Because obviously John plays in Germany now. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. How, sprechen Sie Deutsch?
Ambition Deutsch.
Yeah, that's a tough language to pick up. The grammar of it, of like the sentence structure, is insane.
Yeah, I'm in classes now, but I feel like I'm picking it up a lot. But it's tough because I live and play in the east of Germany, so everyone knows what people say about the east. I have nothing bad to say. I love the people here, but the dialect is so different. Also, they say that the west, like the dialect in the west of Germany, is much easier to understand and pick up. Mm-hmm. And plus, in the west, there are like more immigrants and stuff, so more people speak English. In the east, it's almost impossible to find people who speak English because people are older here and they're just straight German. So I don't know where you lived exactly.
Straight German. Straight German. Yeah, no, I'll start why I went over there in the first place. I was basically, after that, my senior year of college, I kind of like tried to go the typical, like get into a preseason with MLS team, went to Vancouver Whitecaps too, went to Sacramento Republic. I was supposed to go to OKC Energy, but stuff kind of like didn't come to like fruition. It didn't work out. So I ended up just going back to school for the summer, stayed in Sacramento, and I just trained with Sacramento Republic for 9 months because I felt like I was a little rough around the edges on some stuff. So I really wanted to work on like, I was all like a typical American in college too, with a very typical American school, very direct, very athletic. So stuff like a Rondo, to me, I just wasn't at the professional level for that. And so like I needed that 9 months at Sacramento Republic, a very build out the back technical team. I needed that to really grow as a player. And so I spent 9 months there. And then after that, I had this German coach who knew me through one of my old youth coaches that was in kind of the Bay Area of California. And he would come out and watch me play the exhibition games when I was with the Republic and with some like PDL games and stuff. And he said, yeah, I could take you over to Germany. Like, I don't know like what your plans are, what you want to do, but I have multiple contacts and from anywhere from the, like up to the Dritte Liga, like where you're playing, all the way down to the 6th, 7th division. And like, we can find something for you. We can kind of weasel in the visa and we'll figure it out, whatever works for you. So I was like, yeah, sure. I was kind of an idiot and I should have left at the start of the season over in Europe, you know, kind of came over in June, July, but I kind of waited all the way to the end of the Republic season in October and went over there. And then I just bounced around going from teams in Mainz, teams in Frankfurt, teams in Pirmasens, up to Gießen. Okay. I went over to a team in Wolfsburg, like all over, and just like in Cologne, Germany. And then like, I just was bouncing all around and it again, trials all the way from like mostly Regionalliga teams in the 4th division. Okay. And then I had a contract in the Regionalliga apartment, everything set up. I was, my tourist visa was like right at the end, right at the winter transfer window. And I was like just all set to sign that. And then the sponsor backed out and I lost it. And I was like, no. And then they're like, yeah, but I have this, my brother owns this 6th division team. We can get you a contract there. You finish out the season, come back here. And this was in like Gießen area, which is like 45 minutes north of Frankfurt. Mm-hmm. And so I finished out the season, like the whole second half of the season with SK Kinzenbach, which is like this little town next to Gießen, which is just a small city outside of Frankfurt.
That's awesome.
Wow.
But
that's a crazy
that is
story.
Wild. That is wild. But to be fair though, Germany, I think maybe save England, but besides England, I think Germany has the best footballing pyramid in Europe, besides England. So I think you were in a perfect place. I don't know what your personal experience was and how much you picked up, but I think, I mean, it must have been a good experience for your footballing development, no?
Yeah. I loved it. I absolutely loved it. Like it was, again, kind of what I needed again, because it was so technical, so tactical, you know, everything's so efficient. There's athletic players for sure, but it's mainly like, it's not just get the ball to the wing and have the winger go 1v1 every single time. It's like a lot of buildup and I really liked that. But again, really, really fun. And the grinding it out in the lower leagues, it's fun. I've experienced promotion relegation, same thing in New Zealand. And it was a really, really cool experience. And I was going to stay there. I was going to stay there after that season and sign with that 4th division team. It was SC Teutonia Watzenburg Steinberg, long ass name. I was going to stay there and sign with them, but I had the trial with the Orange County Blues. And it was like in the USL, and I was like, that's hard to pass up. And so I went back to the US and trialed with them.
During that your decision to go, were you in a relationship with anyone or no?
Yeah, my now wife, she's on the couch, she's staring at me. My Mimi, she basically stayed with me like as soon as I dropped out of college. I had to talk with her like, look, I have no idea where I'm going to go. I have no idea what's going to happen. I could go to any country, any place in the U.S. But if you want to stay with me, we can. But I can't promise like stability, and I need to go chase this for as long as I want. And, you know, if you want to follow along, I would absolutely love that. But I understand if you don't. And she just stayed along the whole time. And when I was over in Germany, she was back in, I think she was still at Sacramento, like going to school. And we kind of just did the long distance thing for 8-9 months or so.
Wow. Yeah, Mrs. Sheldon is semi-famous. I know her from the vlogs. but yeah, congrats. I know you guys recently got married, right? December of last year?
Yeah.
Big ups to her for sticking along. Big ups to her.
Yeah. Crazy. Yeah. I don't know if... Yeah, it's been a journey all over. She came down to New Zealand with me. She was over in Tulsa with me for 3 years. Now she's out here in Charleston. But it's so nice to have that, like to come home from training and to just, because I think girlfriends and stuff could be distraction if you're with the wrong person. But I think if you're with the right person, it's so nice to have that mental break and to come back home and just talk about something other than football, you know?
100%. I agree with you 100%. But it is crazy. I mean, the journey that you went on and I mean, ending up where you are now is a big congrats to you and how hard you've been working. Cause a lot of guys would have given up, you know, a lot of guys appealing, like it's not appealing to go to Germany and play in a fourth division or to go to New Zealand. Like that's not appealing, but you've stuck with it and worked through it. And it leads us into the YouTube. How did you like, what made you want to start the YouTube channel and what was your like thought process of why you wanted to do it?
Yeah, I was in college. I was really, this was like right when like vlogging was kind of like becoming a thing on YouTube, and it still wasn't even really a job. Like now, if you think of a YouTuber, you think of them as like someone who's, it's their full-time job. But back then it was like, oh, you just make YouTube videos. Like it's whatever, it's dumb. And I was following like nutritionists and like sport performance vloggers that would kind of go through what they eat, what they do, how they train athletes. Just because I was like obsessed with that topic and trying to like get the best out of that kind of, you know, those things. And then, and just weightlifters as well. And just kind of learning that side of everything. And I thought this is so cool to see someone with like a full degree in this stuff, talking about sports performance and showing what they eat and how they train and how they work out. And I'm like, this is so awesome. And I was like, it'd be amazing if there was footballers out there in the world doing the same thing, showing their off-season training, showing what they do, you know, whether how light it was, how heavy it was, if they're showing their food that they eat, preparing for a game. And I was like, that would be awesome. And then at this time, when I was thinking about that, like I was training with Sacramento Republic and kind of also in that period to go over to Germany. And I was like, I wanted that so bad. And like, well, you know, I'm not playing in the Prem. I'm not doing this, but I have a little bit of experience. And as long as I go about it the right way and I kind of show like, this is my journey and not exactly telling exactly everybody what they should be doing. And I was like, if I kind of show my journey with this, I think it could be interesting to some people, hopefully. And it is hard to start because you kind of throw yourself out there. But I did. And immediately, like it was not, I shouldn't say that. There was interest from like 20 to 50 people watching the videos, which to me was crazy to think about. There's 20 to 50 people watching, even though I was getting 50 views on a video, it wasn't that crazy. But to me, I thought like, oh, that's pretty cool. And then I just kind of stuck with it and never stopped. And then now 6-7 years later, it's kind of grown into this where there's a decent little following.
A decent little following. What a humble guy. Statement right there. Yeah. Wow. But I wanted to ask you this and you don't have to answer if you don't want. But I was going to ask, do you make more money on the YouTube than you have in your soccer career?
Yeah, that's a good question. It switched over when I was at Tulsa, I think. Yeah. Where all of a sudden I was making more money from YouTube sponsorships, like all that kind of stuff, than from my actual contracts. I'm playing the USL. I'm not making millions of dollars. But it was really cool to see that. And at one hand, I almost like struggled with that a little bit because for a long time I had on YouTube, like I adamantly had said, like, I'm a footballer first, YouTuber second. And if anytime this YouTube channel interferes with anything of my career, I'm cutting it off. Anytime like I'm tired late at night, I'm not stressing to get a video out. I'm going to bed. anytime something's coming up and I'm worrying about whatever, it doesn't matter. Like, I'm a footballer first, footballer first. And when it switched over and I started making more money from YouTube, it was like a weird thing of like, okay, well, can I still say I'm a footballer first, YouTuber second, when my income doesn't reflect that, you know? But I think as long as I keep on making that clear, and that's what I want to do, and that's how I view my life, like, it's, I still view it like that. And still, even if it doesn't make sense financially to me and like my priorities, it does make sense.
I love that. You literally just answered a question that me and Tanner, so we met before to kind of get our questions together. And I literally had him in my notes and said, we're going to ask you if you prioritize soccer or YouTube. And literally our question was going to be, we're going to give you the example of, if you know that you have to put a video out the next day, would you stay up late editing it, even if you know that you have to travel the next morning for a game or something? But I guess you just answered it. But I don't know if you even know now, because you said you're struggling with it. Like, I don't know if you know what you would do.
Yeah, yeah, no, I'm 100, like, I'm strict bedtime at 10. If anything comes up with that, like, that's what I love about YouTube too, because I don't have a schedule. And like a lot of YouTubers, like, oh, new video every Monday, new video every Sunday, whatever. And I have like a podcast as well. And for me, it's just like, whenever I want, like, I'll throw up a video whenever I want. And as long as I hit, like, I have little goals for myself to post like 4 videos a month. And as long as I'm doing that, then I'm happy with that. But even then, if I go through a month and something's going on or off the field where it changes, I have no problem just cutting that off for a full month, 2 months, a year, if I need to. So yeah, so still like full, my career takes full priority over YouTube and everything.
That's interesting. But I wanted to ask, like, kind of like how you started the channel. Like, now it's, I've seen now how it's become like a day, and like, you know, you kind of follow, they come along with you for the games. You do different things, analysis on your games, which I think is a brilliant idea. And then you do, you know, you do a bunch of different videos, but kind of before, if I'm understanding right, you did like technique and different training drills, which you still do training drills, but it's more like now, I feel like your football career has definitely helped you grow the channel in a different direction. But before, like, you were starting with just like technique and different things like that, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that, like, cause it was hard, cause as soon as you start YouTube, the first thing you do is like, okay, what's everybody else doing? And then that kind of sparks ideas for what you should do. And so on YouTube, it was like the free kickers, it was F2 freestylers. And then there was like some people doing some tutorials of like how to hit a long ball and stuff like that. And so at that point, I kind of was like, well, I'm not a freestyler. I don't just want to go out to the field and hit free kicks. I kind of like want to do more of the training side of it. So I'll just start simple and do like what those guys were doing, and just kind of film like how to hit a long ball, and very tutorial-esque type of videos, or very like 5 dribbling drills, stuff like that. And then when I was over in Germany, that's when it kind of sparked of like, okay, well, you know, I was watching those vloggers that showed their life, and like, that's pretty cool. I am in a unique situation over in Germany playing lower leagues. It would be cool to show that side of it. And then that's when I kind of started to make the transition, but I still was like 50-50 there. And then as like my career kind of grew, and then as I signed my first fully professional contract with the Orange County Blues and went on from there, it was like, okay, now I want to shift this to this perspective, because I only have, you know, my career to show this. I can always go back and film, or go in the future and film 5 different dribbling drills or whatever. But I think it's a unique thing where there's not many other pro footballers showing their diet, showing their offseason training, showing their workouts, their fitness routines. So I was like, this is like a unique opportunity that I should take advantage of now. And then the future, when I'm retired, I can go and make that shift again to whatever is next.
Oh yeah, I love that.
Yeah, I think you struck a gold mine. I don't really know if even you know like how many footballers you've touched. Like, even me, I've been following your Instagram for a while now. And now when I the ball on a wall thing, I always think of you like, just all you need is a wall and a ball. And you just, I always think of that one passing drill where you had the 2 walls in a corner, and then you pass against it, and then you control, and then you pass against the next wall. I love that drill. But that's, yeah, awesome. Actually back then, just a little side note. So we started this podcast back in 2020. We recently just started taking it seriously. But I DM'd you back in like March of 2020 to be on this, like right when we started. But I guess it was dumb because I DM'd your Become Elite account, which you have a lot of followers on. So I guess you never saw it. But yeah, I thought that was funny because
damn, I just, I, I just, I just ghosted you, huh?
Yeah, honestly, too big time.
No, dude, you what's funny is like, I it's funny to hear it, but like, I'm big on social media, but I'm not the biggest fan of social media, and I really don't spend that much time. Like, even, you know, going through and seeing your DM recently, like, I hopped in the hot tub before every single training session. So I was just sitting in the hot tub, and I probably check my DMs once a month. And because I just really don't, I kind of post and then pop off. And the same with YouTube, I post and pop off. And I kind of, I was like, you know what, I should go check my DMs, just because you never know, like, what opportunities, interviews, whatever. Because I like doing this stuff a lot. I really like doing interviews and podcasts and everything. So I kind of just randomly popped on that morning, and you had messaged me like a day before. I was like, oh, cool. Yeah, Joe, I know Jonathan. Okay, cool. Yeah, I'll do this. So it worked out well. Which I need to do. Like, I need to be more disciplined, like, going on and checking my DMs, you know?
So you run everything, though. Like, you edit all the videos, you film everything, you run your Instagram, everything.
Yeah, everything, all the stuff. Mimi, my wife, will help me with some stuff. Like, maybe, not really. She doesn't really help me, actually. I mean, maybe, like, she behind the scenes, she does a lot. Like, she helps me set up tripods. And she'll help me, like, get the right angles, and she'll film a lot. Like, a lot of the videos on YouTube, if it's someone moving a camera and behind the camera, it's always Mimi. But other than that, really, I post everything on Instagram, TikTok, do the podcast, YouTube channel, editing, all that stuff.
That's a lot, though. I mean, we recently like just got an editor, and we kind of got a social media, like, I guess, what do we call it?
Manager,
like
maybe, I guess.
Like a manager. But like, for us, it was like, obviously we were willing to take like the roles of, you know, editing and posting on all this stuff. But for me, at least, that's not like why I want to do this. Like, I like getting all the people like you and having a chat and figuring out for the guests, like, what they like to listen to and learn something as well from our conversation. But I don't like the editing. I don't like all the techie stuff and posting and trying to find the algorithm and all this stuff. So like, one of our big things was trying to find somebody to do it for us and run it for us while we can just focus on us playing and then us doing the interview, that the main stuff. So I find it really impressive that you managed to do all that, because I know running our chum chat for the past 2 years has been tough, and we've come out with, you know, a little bit of merch, as you see in the background, and dealing with that as well, like shipping it out and running all the costs and everything. It was tough as well, and getting the photo shoots. So I can't imagine like having like 3 or 4 pages, and that's tough, bro. I don't know how you get
it. It's a lot. But again, like, that's why it was so important to me. Like, I'm sure you guys don't think of Chum Chat as like takes priority over your careers, you know, but like, it can. You can see how the workload can just multiply over the years, especially as you dump more time into it. So like, that's for me really important, was like, okay, look, I want to do a lot. Like, I like all this stuff. And then for me, I really like editing, and I like doing the drone stuff. And I like all that kind of stuff behind the camera and the nerd stuff for the podcast and figuring out the microphones. Like, I really enjoy all that kind of stuff, but I knew that I could easily see how this would take over my career. And all of a sudden I would be spending less time on stuff off the field than I needed to. So yeah, that was a big thing. Like, I was like, I'm going to do this all myself. But again, there's no rules of what I need to do, how much I need to post, all that kind of, all that stuff that I thought could take over. And all of a sudden I'm worrying more about my YouTube channel than I am about my recovery.
Did that ever hit you though? Like in your thought process of, like you said, your income from YouTube was overtaking your playing. And does that ever come into your thought? Like, if I posted 6 videos a month, or if I did a little more, like I could, it would be easier for the long term, or does that ever enter your brain or no?
Yeah. I thought about that a lot. I think in the short term, if I'm looking like for my this year, 2022's income, I think I could make probably way more money, double the money I'm normally making this year, if I focused and shifted all of my time, like even quit professional soccer and did 100% into YouTube, 100% growing that. You know, even work on building some sort of facility and going into that full thing and really focusing my time and effort on being more strict, putting out more YouTube videos, more content, more podcasts, 100% in the short term. But I think in the long term, the best thing that's going to help that whole facility, the YouTube channel in general, is the better career that I can have. The longer I play, the more experience I get, the more people I meet playing. So I'm willing to take the hit in the short term, even if it's 10 years short term, of playing and developing my career and my knowledge as a player. And then I think once I'm all done, I'm fully done playing and I'm like, I'm ready to move on. Then I'll shift the focus and ramp up the social media side, the YouTube side, the podcast side. But, and even for me too, I know when I'm like 50, looking back, I'd be disappointed in myself if I quit. I'm like, well, yeah, sure, I made more money, had more YouTube followers and everything. But really what means a lot to me is like the experience of playing. Like, you know, playing is the best. Like when you reach a new high, play in front of a bigger crowd, get a bigger contract, move up a division, it's hard to replicate anywhere else, you know?
Yeah, 100%. 100%. You can't sacrifice the playing career.
No, mm-hmm. Not at all. Not at all. And I just want to apologize quickly because I deceived you in the DM. I mean, this has gone over 30 minutes, but there's so much to learn from you. And I just want to ask, I guess we can keep this on or off air. But obviously, you see us. We're kind of new to it. We're barely starting to, I say, really kind of think about things. We're putting more effort into the questions that we ask in the interviews itself and kind of what we put out. What advice would you have? Not only for us, but for young people getting in the game, you know, how do you know? Because I feel like you know exactly what to post. You know what I mean? You know exactly what's going to hit. Like, how do you know that?
Yeah, I feel like I don't. Like, it's funny. I feel like I don't at all. I almost have like the opposite about it. But I think the thing is, it's like I do a lot of brainstorming like beforehand, like just on the title of like, what would I click on, you know? And it's hard to balance that line with clickbait because you can clickbait and people get really mad and everything. And you have to have the content to back it up for people to be like, oh, wow. Because you want people to be, that's interesting title, and click on it. Or when it pops up on their Instagram page, pops up on their YouTube channel, whatever. But then you want people that actually get on that and after they click to watch the whole thing and be like, wow, that was sick. I want to see more from these guys, you know? So it's like both. And so I do a lot of brainstorming about what title and thumbnail should I do in order to drive like an interest. Like, for example, I'm going to film a video this afternoon about like five things I wish I knew before playing professional football. And that was like, oh, wow, if I saw that on YouTube, I would probably click on that just to see what a pro has to say about something he wish he knew before he signed this first pro contract. And then I'm thinking about how to do the thumbnail. But then I put like just the same amount of time into the actual like content to make sure it's really well polished and looks good. And not just the simple stuff where people are like, oh yeah, this is stupid. You know, oh, I wish I would have trained harder. I wish I would have slept more at night. I want to do stuff where people like really think, and it's more deep, where it's almost like if someone like with your guys' career, if you guys were to watch that, you wouldn't come away and like, oh, this is for kids. I don't want to watch this. It's like, oh wow, like this is important. You know, like one of the topics was like imposter syndrome. Like I struggled with imposter syndrome throughout my whole career, thinking like I'm a fraud. Like I shouldn't be here. Cause I think my career my youth career wasn't that good. And I kind of like, once I got to the pro level, I'm like, well, I'm with all these pros, guys that played in the Prem, guys that played in the MLS. And then there's me, like, I shouldn't be here. Like I'm not competent enough to be here. And I struggled with that my whole career. And then I kind of realized as I've gone through my whole career, everybody has those doubts, and everybody, or most people have those doubts. Most players doubt their abilities at times. Sometimes they're flying with confidence, but they're going to have moments where they're not 100% confident on the field or in training or whatever. And then like, that was something I wish I knew when I was younger, that even these guys that have played at these amazing careers still have some self-doubt and still doubt their abilities at times. So like, that's one topic and one point of my video. And so that's something where I'm like, okay, hopefully by touching on that, that's something that a pro, somebody with a lot of experience, can get something out of it. And a younger kid can get something out of that as well. And that's something that hopefully then they'd watch that and not go, oh, that's stupid, I don't need that. And then go, wow, that video interests me from the thumbnail. And then I really got some value from that topic, something that like touched upon it. And then now is going to affect my career in a positive way, hopefully. And then go from that. And I think that's really how you grow. And then in terms of like hitting the right thumbnails or the right content or whatever, I think it's just quantity. Like you have to put a lot of effort into it, but then just pump out videos. You know, I've put out like 600 YouTube videos and only like probably 10, 20 of them have gone like viral or whatever. So I think that it's just putting out a ton of content, a ton of quantity, but then also trying to focus on that quality of the content so they stick around.
Yeah. Shout out your yoga video. I swear I've seen that on my recommended like 30 times.
You know what's funny is that was one of the videos where I was like, I was almost said like, okay, I haven't put out a video in a while. What's something that I could do like relatively easy? And I think a yoga routine would be good. I've never tried it. I've never really done it before. And then that was one that just popped off that I did not expect to really do well.
So interesting. I mean, I could go on this conversation forever, and I know John said 30 minutes. So this is my last question. But I just wanted to ask, during COVID, obviously I feel like a lot more people were on YouTube. A lot more people were struggling to find good training drills with one or two people. Do you think your channel like popped off during COVID? Did you see any like analytics that like made it take a next step or elevate you a little bit or no?
Yeah, I did. I don't think it was anything crazy. I think like there was a bump though across the board. And I think that whenever, like, I think at the time I was probably getting like on average 30,000 views per video. And then as COVID hit and I kept on doing the same type of videos and vlogging my experience and my workouts and training and all that stuff, I was also putting out more content because there's nothing to do, but all those videos were probably getting like 40 to like 60,000 views. And so there definitely was a bump, but there wasn't like, oh, something went viral. I was getting a ton of like new people. It was just kind of like a steady increase over that whole kind of whole quarantine period. And then it just kind of stuck around there. And I think there was definitely a dip as it kind of life went back to normal, but yeah, for the most part, it kind of just helped bump it up a little bit. And as far as time goes, I, like I said, my whole afternoon's free. If there's stuff that you didn't hit or wanted to talk about, I'm fine about that. But also I know longer podcasts can also be a little boring too. So whatever you guys want.
Yeah. Honestly, yeah, no. I feel like I'm learning a lot. So either way we can cut same. To like the most important no, but, parts, but
yeah,
I still have a couple more. First, we're going to ask our signature question. It's the most important thing. As you can see here, success defined is our whole thing. And it's so interesting because when you think of success, you just think of, everyone has a different definition of it. You know what I mean? So I wanted to ask you what your definition of success is, and do you think you've achieved it yet?
Yeah. So I would say success is the ability to do what you want to do every single day and to make like some form of living from that. And then just to be happy with what you're doing. I guess that's pretty much it. It's like just to be happy with your doing with what you're doing every single day. And that to me would be defined as success. I think because that makes up a big part of your life, you know. I think I would say that would be like working success. But I think overall success is just being happy with your life overall. And because that's like what you kind of want to achieve no matter what, just being satisfied and fulfilled. And happiness, I think, can be different. And I always talk with Mimi about like, there's a difference between like short-term happiness or short-term just joy that you get from stuff versus like long-term fulfillment. And for me, like, I'm not exactly happy to sit down and spend 8 hours editing a full vlog on my couch, you know, on a beautiful sunny day. I'd rather be outside doing something more fun, go to the beach. But I sometimes think that like, oh, well, the long-term fulfillment of my life of building a YouTube channel and helping other people and putting out content that I'm really proud of is going to bring me that long-term fulfillment that will be basically be more happiness. And then for the work, like, I really think that it's really important to do something that really you're excited about every single day and working to make that your job, whether that's football training every day and becoming a pro, or if it's like starting a podcast, something you really love to do and growing that and making that your job. But I think that for me is success. But yeah, I'd say that.
Good answer.
Do you think you're successful?
Yeah.
I would say so in terms of that. There's always, you always want more, you know, especially as athletes, like as soon as you achieve something, you just want more. As soon as you go up and get your first pro contract, you want to make more money at a higher division, play in front of more people, have a bigger name for yourself. You're always thinking about the next step. But I think for the most part, in terms of that, like, I'm doing something that I love on the field every single day, off the field every single day, I'm able to make a living from that. And then I think I have a good balance of like long-term happiness, fulfillment of trying to reach those goals, and then short-term happiness of being able just to go to the beach and hang out and go to grab coffee and kind of enjoy that kind of stuff.
Transitioning Beautiful. A little bit into wanting more. I know we don't want to go over too much, but we got to talk about your goals. I know Tanner talked about going over them later on in the podcast. I think now's a good time. What are your goals for this year with your new team?
Yeah, I think first is it's to win it all. I mean, every team's going to say that. I was joking about it with my teammates. It's like, oh, we never even went over our goals for the year. I'm like, do we need to? Like, you know what the goal is. It's everybody. Do we need to sit around and talk about that we all want to win a championship? That's, of course, that's the goal. But I think every team sits down and says that kind of like flat out. But I think for to be a little bit more direct with it, I think that the goal for sure is to make playoffs. I think getting in that playoff berth of top 8 teams, 9 teams, whatever it is this year, I think that will really show that this team, especially with a new coach and new players coming in, that it was a successful season, and then hopefully having some sort of playoff run in the off in the postseason. And then for me personally, like, my goals are always to be able to get on the field as much as possible. It's a 34 game season. So I want to play 30 of the games. I've already now will not play one of the games this weekend, but the goal is to play 30 games this season. And then again, to take one step higher from last year. I think last year I had 2 goals, 3 assists, 2 goals, 4 assists, and I want to have more than that. So I said 3 to 5 goals, and I said 5+ assists.
Yeah. Perfect way to end that, because last episode we started a little something we'd been talking about for a while. And so we're thinking about it, and we think, I've seen your goals. I don't know. It feels just the excitement of, you know, scoring the goals, but you don't really have a trademark celebration, right?
No. Okay. It hasn't happened enough in my career for me to have a trademark celebration.
Okay. Well, we're starting. We haven't thought of one yet, but Tan had the idea last podcast of just getting all of our alumni to come together as a network. And when they score goals, just maybe do a little salute to the camera or something. And that'll be your sign that, you know, you're a Chum Chat alumni. You're showing love. So I don't know if you're down, but we would love to see that. And then we'll obviously get the video and plug it on our socials. I think that would be sick.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I'll try to remember. Honestly, the last couple goals I scored, I was just blacked out and just started running up and jumping and all that stuff. So we'll see. Hopefully I can remember that.
It's fine if you don't, but we just had to put it out there. One of the last things also is we always ask our guests who they want to see on next on Chum Chat.
That's a good question. I'd say, you know, bring up Matteo Rattaccio. Has he been on here yet?
No, he hasn't actually.
No.
Yeah, I think that'd be good to have him out here.
It's a good show. That would be good. That would be a class episode. But no, we appreciate you coming on. I've learned a lot this episode, and it's been a pleasure talking with you. And following along on your journey, I've watched a couple of videos during quarantine. That's why I was watching some of the training vids and putting in the work. So, you know, I love what you're doing. I'll be following you all this year for sure. I'll be staying in touch, but I really appreciate you coming on and talking with us. So thank you, bro.
Yeah, no problem. I appreciate you guys having me on. It was a lot of fun.
Thank you guys so much for tuning in. I know you guys enjoyed it. It was probably a really long episode, but if you made it this far, thank you so much. Obviously, thanks again to Matt. His Instagram will be plugged the whole time throughout the episode, so you guys can go show him love. All of his links will be in our description. And yeah, hope you guys enjoyed the episode. And like we always say, go find your own success. Deuces.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.